Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, congratulations. You have survived this nation's remonstrance or the remembrance of gluttony, I guess, because it seems like the majority of America is still consumed with the New Age concept of Thanksgiving. I must say, though, that it is the holidays that really provides us a real outreach, because so many people on actual holiday days, such as the big hitters, Rush and so forth, they usually just air, you know, for a few of the days during the holiday, their best ofs and so forth. However, we believe that if we can provide you with the meaningful content, you'll actually start breaking away from their news cycle and the never-ending glance at the problem that has no solution, at least on their show. But we want to prove to you that we actually have the solution. You see, just to be really clear, and I'm just going to be right to the point, the Constitution, as you've probably heard, is the solution. I used to roll my eyes when I heard that. And I don't believe that the people that used to say that really understood. I do believe that they understood knowledge and education was the solution and process. And there's a lot of status quo organizations and people that are out there teaching, but they are not. They're not one either bold enough to actually come out with what they would say is the irrefutable argument and the irrefutable solution. Not like me. However, I think that they recognize that, you know, once they've convinced you that you're learning something and you're understanding something better, then you are better off. But are you? I mean, to what end are you better off if you can't break free, if you can't get out of the cage that we've been placed in? And they're just people that gets us into one corner of the cage to get us into appeasement that this is the best corner to be in. I'm telling you, we need to get out of this cage. And I am telling you that the Constitution is a compact. The states are the parties to that compact. The Constitution was written for and by the states, and the Constitution gained zero force until a certain number of states, quote unquote, bought into this compact. In other words, ratified. What does the term ratify mean? The term ratify is the formal process of accepting a treaty, compact, or what have you. It is a legal term. And therefore, the legality of the ownership of the Constitution points to those who had to ratify. When it comes to treaties, the states that ratify that treaty are those stakeholders, and they're the ones that are the ultimate judges. These are things that Madison pointed out and actually wrote. This is why we cite these things. But I want you to understand something. We want to hit you really quick and hard right now. We want you to know that the only way we're going to get the federal government into compliance is getting the states, what I used to call the stakeholders, but actually they're the shareholders of this compact, those who have the authority within this compact to step in and say, we never delegated these powers to you to do all of these things that is stealing our soul and destroying our nation. And therefore, the states have all the political and legal force necessary in getting the federal government into compliance. So why is it that you're not hearing this? Why is this message only coming from one show? Well, actually, there are other shows. I have other, I'll just say, other hosts like Douglas V. Gibbs, who talks about Republic Review and recognizes exactly what it'll do. He's on board with this. There are others that are out there that actually understand this. And that's just because they haven't reached a point where their income is so overwhelming that there's no way they could kill the goose that lays the golden egg. You have to understand that those golden eggs are very precious. When you're living a life of an elitist, you get your time on television and all of these things because you're a superstar. Why would you want to fix this problem? You would have to actually get a job. I'm not looking to do this for the rest of my life. I want to solve this problem so that we can move on in solving other problems because I actually have, and I'm planning on living a much fuller life beyond this. I believe we can do this. And oh, by the way, I do believe if we don't do this, we will all rue the day. We will all regret what we had in our hands, the opportunity we possess today, and we will come to recognize and bear shame with our children, our grandchildren, and our posterity that we failed to act like those before when they were put in the exact same position because we are unable, incapable, or unwilling to put aside our self-interests and our differences. Gosh, it really peeves me off to see so many people so divided and judgmental. If you look at the disparate churches, the disparate religions that were involved in this Constitutional Convention and creating this Constitution, do you think the Lord had any greater favor towards the Episcopalians, the Protestants, the non-denominationals, the Puritans, the different sects and faiths that were at that table, that were at that convention, that were involved in this process? Do you believe that he actually withheld his blessings to some and not bestowed his bounty and blessings upon all? As long as we put aside our differences, he will bless us. As long as we put aside our self-interests, he will bless us. What else do you need to know? What else do you need to know other than the fact that because the Constitution is a compact, that means that the parties, the shareholders, the stakeholders, whatever you want to call them, those who have the ultimate authority over the compact, they have the ability to audit that said compact, be able to go through all of the rulings by the Supreme Court, who has overstepped their bounds in jurisdiction till the cows can't even come home. I mean, we're so far outside these boundaries, my friends, and we have to step in. We have to reel this all in. And we have this ability. All we have to do is get our state legislators back on track and get these guys out from being managers of the party, managers of agendas, and people who are allowing our governors to inflict tyranny upon us. If you're looking for real constitutional solutions, this is the show. And we really appreciate the listenership we had yesterday. I mean, we're in, I think, the top five of streaming and or listened shows over the internet and through apps and so forth. I mean, we are a big hitter when it comes to talk radio. And I'm so blessed and so thankful to be able to be on this platform. Now, one of the things we need to do is, like we always do, is we need to just at least remind you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this really is, and that's why I started saying all of these things, that this is really the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic-based solutions that are actually capable of solving our problems. I mean, why would I waste your time? I challenge you to prove me wrong. Send me an email. I will read it. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org if I am wrong. Now, as we know, we're still kind of watching everything kind of, is it unraveling? Is communism galvanizing or is it coagulating? Is it solidifying? What the heck is going on? And to be honest with you, who really cares, right? I mean, I do care, but you have to understand that even if Trump gets reelected, he's not going to solve the problem. And 4 years from now, the Bolshevik Revolution is only going to be stronger if he gets reelected. Do you understand what I just said? These dolts that are coming out of our education system, until we take our education system back, until we can actually start prying into the minds of these, and I'll just call them these petulant juveniles that think they know everything and they buy into the false narrative. This is why I've said this before, that kids have this natural nature to challenge their parents' paradigm. Now, you know, in a way, their parents are wrong because their parents are constitutionally illiterate. But the problem is that they're buying into even a worse wrong or even a less supportable argument than what their parents are teaching them. Kids love truth and they love to be right. And I'm telling you, if you really want to exploit that innate desire within a child to become right and independent and standing on something, because that's what we see these kids. These kids really believe communism is the answer. And until we can prove to them, and we can prove to them that they're wrong. We can prove to them that what they're doing is antithetical to liberty. And most people, I don't care how hardcore communist you are, most people are not that, you know, that driven, or I should say, they still believe in their own property. How many communists do you know that actually leave the keys in their car? So because it's not their property, they can't own property. They're not hypocrites. They believe and understand property. They believe, well, actually, they are hypocrites. But anyway, we've got these promos. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so for those of you who actually have caught us, are new to the show, because maybe you listened over Thanksgiving weekend, or other people kind of brought you and you go, this is kind of interesting. We do cover a lot of information. And what we've been doing is we've been kind of laying this foundation. And so what we started with was things like the scale of liberty, the fundamental understanding of individual property and individual sovereignty, and the American sovereignty, these types of concepts and principles that you just never learned that are integrated and integral in this constitutional framework that the framers used in building this great republic. Anyway, as we kind of move forward, there's a lot of things I could go through on the obligatories, but what I want to do is kind of show you where we've kind of been, where we are. And I was really hoping to actually have, you know, Thanksgiving kind of fall right at that point, that pinnacle time in this timeline that I'm going through, this information I'm giving you, that it just, you know, it's almost like that well-planned out reel-to-reel tape of music for a New Year's Eve celebration, that right when the, you know, the clock strikes midnight, you know, I remember when I was a kid, this guy had it timed out to where the Frankenstein synthesizer solo, you know, went into effect. Those types of, I'll say, orchestrated, or those types of what do you call those, rehearsed, or, you know, when dance routines and so forth, they've just planned these things out to that minute detail. I wish I could have done that so that when we got to Thanksgiving, I could really lay out just how important Thanksgiving really is. Most people don't even realize that this was our first religious holiday and still is our religious holiday. It is the time, as I stated yesterday and the day before, this is the time where we're supposed to set aside, you know, our daily routines and give thanks to Him and give service to Him that gave us this Constitution, this nation, the tranquility, and all the blessings. And instead, we have reverted back to old family traditions of, you know, the pilgrims or what do you want to call those corporations and entrepreneurs that went into Virginia and gave thanks and so forth. The point is that Thanksgiving is one of the most important holidays that we're supposed to be recognizing. And it has been completely marginalized. As a matter of fact, today, as my voice is going out, more people are consumed with being on the road, getting into the stores that are going to have the, you know, the door opening sales, the, you know, and consumed with the buying for what? Supposedly this thing called Christmas. Well, this is why we give you some of these original materials and these concepts, because we're going to give you what really Christmas should be and how we've been manipulated into this huge spending, gluttony, whatever, for what we are doing for Christmas. And we're not centering, truly, we're not centering Christmas on Christ. And that was the intent, supposedly. But it was quickly hijacked into secularism and into actually a day of commercial opportunity. Anyway, I just want you to understand, 231 years ago, yesterday, this newly formed nation gave thanks in the form of service to our Creator. Now, yesterday, on the exact same date of the year, the 26th of November, you know, how much service, how much thought, how much pondering went to thanking the Lord for this Constitution and the blessings that this form of government has given us. In essence, they, back then, 231 years ago, they sanctified our Constitution. And we're not doing that anymore. And we really need to be doing that, because if you're thankful for something, it's one thing to say thank you, right? A child says thank you and then runs off and that's it, because those are just words. But those are the words that they've been programmed or told and educated by their adults that that's important, because, you know, we're not going to give you anything else if you don't thank us. Well, actually, you know, we start learning in a grander, you know, in a grander scheme, a grander paradigm, that true thanks is actually done with sacrifice and sanctifying. the appreciation for something, and therefore sacrifice in giving of, you know, like tithes or giving of yourself, your time. And that's why they called for the, you know, a national proclamation for thanks and service. That was the whole point of sanctifying that Constitution. Most people don't even understand the whole essence of our Thanksgiving that Washington had actually created at the behest of a unanimous Congress. Anyway, you know, if you look at it this way, how many Christians do you know that speak out about, oh, America's not biblical, we need to get back to the biblical basics? You know what? Before you can do that, you need to start understanding the Constitution. Then you can start understanding the divine hand's anybody that does the research, anybody that goes through the writings of these framers will recognize that the Constitution is, in essence, scripture, but it's not scripture for the salvation of man. It is scripture for the governance of mankind. That's why the divine hand of providence inspired such a document, and why it's been such a blessing to this world. Look at how far this world has come in the 231 years because of this. We've been to the moon. We are, you know, we're overcoming our differences as nations and being able to, you know, start working international space stations and so forth. Even though there's maniacal and machinations and avarice, you know, by many players in all these different nations, the Lord actually, when you look at the Constitution in the grand scheme of things, it is the recipe for globalism, how everybody on the basis of liberty can live in a system and under a system that actually puts individual liberty and individual sovereignty front and foremost. Are we just incapable of recognizing the sacredness of our Constitution? Are these people just, you know, they only want to give lip service to the Bible, but they don't want to give lip service to any of the Lord's doings and creations and so forth? I don't know, but I'll just repeat this until the day I die, or the Constitution is gone, or it becomes no longer accurate or valid because we have finally changed our paradigm on the Constitution. If you want to understand the commandments of God and live His law, you must read the scriptures on a regular basis. And in so doing, gives you the opportunity to recognize the perversions of the doctrines that are being practiced in the multitude of churches today. Now, that's why you read the scriptures on a regular basis. If you want to understand the laws and the divine hand of providence's guide for governing us and living in a world of liberty, you must read the Constitution, like the Ten Commandments, and then you have to read the founding documents to understand those Ten Commandments. It's really not that hard, my friends. This is why we actually help read those to you, so that you can understand the epiphanies that will come to you in reading the ratification debates. The ratification debates are the source documents. They're the founding documents that explain the Constitution, just like the scriptures explain the commandments of God. Come on, don't be a hypocrite and say, we've got to do this, but, you know, this is all we care about. If you can't recognize the divine hand of providence in our Constitution, then you have failed to really open your eyes and take it to the Lord. I mean, what is it? Ask and ye shall receive, right? If you start looking, all of the framers and everything that they did, their lives and their work is a testimony that this Constitution and this Republic was established by our Creator. And Washington and all of them, I can't emphasize this enough, went to their graves without ever recanting that position and those assertions, period. Now, I want to wrap up on what we're talking about as this foundation. Again, we've already gone through natural law. We've already gone through the scale of liberty, property, those types of things. And we've actually been in the process of going through, and I think one of the last things we covered was the mystical clauses, or the clauses within the Constitution. And so today, I kind of want to pick up where we left off, because had it been perfect, had it been that, you know, perfect New Year's Eve party where, you know, Thanksgiving, I could go straight into Thanksgiving on the day before Thanksgiving and not miss a beat in where I'm covering the Constitution, it would have been, you know, wow, just it really probably would have drove this home. So maybe next year I'll try to calculate and plan this out, because we do this stuff. I do this stuff every year with different content, going through it differently, giving you different views of this as much as I possibly can, because I truly believe that once you start having the epiphany, you go, oh my gosh, this really isn't rocket science, but this really is the message. And it's not about me. The message is the Constitution, the message, and actually the selling points. These are all the framers' words. I'm only offering these words to you because we're all too busy to actually take the time. So if you've ever had an audiobook, if you've ever, you know, been able to just consume yourself in information via an audio format, I believe that this platform, this show, is the opportunity of doing that, so that you can actually read so much of the ratification debates to actually have the conviction in your heart to realize what a blessing and the truth of the Constitution and what we can be doing to actually solve our problems. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so as we want to move forward in what we're covering, we kind of covered what is in the Constitution and how the framers clarified how what could be perceived as portals or opportunities of general powers, they clearly shut the door, because the minds of the anti-federalists were much sharper than anybody could think. This is why when they actually wrote the Constitution, they had already gone through every single one of these arguments themselves. And so the anti-federalists, so you got to understand, the key issue, the key point that really came down to why there was resistance against this Constitution, and it was one issue at best. And it really came down to the Bill of Rights. because bottom line, it was an enumerated constitution. There's not one person that disagreed with that. Now, there were some nuances, and each of these nuances, like the exclusive legislation, which is another thing we already covered, the mystical clauses and those types of things, all of those issues were used to argue for a Bill of Rights. So as you understand, as we've kind of laid out, this enumerated constitution that delegates only very specific powers, if it's not listed, then they cannot meddle with that type of power, role, or responsibility. The federal government must have it enumerated to them. And it can't be something that is, you know, incidental, as one would consider. It can't be, quote unquote, implied underneath something. It has to have direct context. And as a matter of fact, that's why the ratification debates really clarified, you know, in what context of incidental and implied can those types of things be. And so they were very, very clear that, and as Madison pointed out, that you can't use the Commerce Clause as an implied power for creating the Department of Transportation. You can't use the General Welfare and Defense Clause for creating a Department of Transportation. You can't use the Supremacy Clause in creating the Department of Transportation. So after they got out the gate, not only did they do a great job in defining this Constitution, but moving forward, every time they tried to imply or create some incidental, you know, connection to some power that is enumerated, well, we can do this. Madison and the framers were very good at clarifying and how they couldn't. And so the whole point is that as you look at, you know, how they shut down these other arguments for things that, you know, like the Department of Transportation, wow, that really does make sense, possibly, until you actually read it. And then once you understand that they can't even make a Department of Transportation to take care of the infrastructure of America without having that power enumerated in the Constitution via an amendment, then how can they do education? How can they do energy, agriculture, labor, on and on and on? They can't. They can't. And as a matter of fact, this is why this is an irrefutable argument. I pray, and I ask, I'm going to ask you, if you're a person that believes in the power of prayer, I ask that you pray that the Constitution Party come forth in actually not only being advocates for enforcing the Constitution, but become advocates for Republic Review. If the Constitution Party and if the NLA, who is already behind, the National Liberty Alliance, the Constitution Association, We the People Foundation, all of these other groups are supporting this premise. And this isn't supporting GR. This is supporting the Constitution. This isn't about me. I don't get a penny. There's no, what do you want to call that, royalty program that everybody that supports this, I get some money. That's not there. It just doesn't exist. I will tell you, and this is full disclosure, I have intellectual property rights on this. And that's only to keep people like Soros or some conservative billionaire that's out there, the Koch brothers, or even Glenn Beck, from being able to buy this and make this an entrepreneurial opportunity so that I can build this big, huge machine. I am offering America, and actually the Lord, and Jefferson and all the framers are offering us an opportunity to use what they've already given us to save ourselves. Folks, it's like, I like using this metaphor, and I know people kind of get lost at this. If you're looking at The Lord of the Rings, if you've ever watched that movie, when Gandalf goes in to, you know, talk to King Rohan, who's under this spell by Wormtongue, and he hits him with his staff and breaks the spell so that he realizes he's not dying. He's not, you know, incontinent. He's not, you know, at the edge of, you know, at the edge of death, that his empire isn't gone, that he still has willing and bodied, you know, able bodies that are capable of fighting evil. And he stands up out of his throne and says, we can do this. And he stands up to do it. That's all we need the states to do. The states are under the same kind of spell, that we believe that we're subjugated to this unconstitutional general government. Folks, let me just move forward, because I can go on and on and on in different ways of saying this. The Constitution has so many different protections, it will blow you away, because the framers completely understood the mechanisms and tools that governments use in oppressing people. And so this is why they had made an enumerated constitution. This is why they even were willing to add the Bill of Rights. This is why they added, you know, these other clarities. This is why the ex post facto laws were considered unconstitutional, not just for the federal government, but for states and local government as well. Did you know that your government can't say that, oh, well, this thing is legal, this thing is constitutional, and then come right out and issue a law that says, you know, possessing this, owning this, having this, or, you know, doing this one thing that has been legal all this time is now illegal, and we're going to punish you for like, it's like slavery. An ex post facto law, they emancipated slaves, but they couldn't punish people for slave ownership. It was an evolutionary process, but they had ex post facto protections from being able to go after people. The whole point of reparations back in the day, Britain was paying reparations to those who were losing by their edict, by this edict of ending slavery. They paid a certain percentage of pounds or shillings or what have you per slave to the, you know, the owner or the post owner of the slaves, so that, because they knew that this was a labor force that they needed to help kickstart economically to pay for. And so they knew that if they paid reparations to the former slave owners, they could in turn have money to actually start paying for the labor of immediate labor to getting things done. If not, the transition of going from having a labor force that was immoral to getting a labor force that you could afford, well, it was such a difficult transition that many people actually went out of business or struggled and barely survived just on their own. It was an reparations was an economic assistance for the economic shift in the market space of labor. And so it was not an ex post facto law to say, we're punishing you because of this. We're helping you out to be, because we've made this change. And so if, when you start understanding the role of an ex post facto law, you can't buy land and have the right to be able to put a well on your property and own your water rights. And then all of a sudden they just, whoop, they come up with this law that says you can't have a well, and if you don't have a well, you can't get a well, and if your well runs dry or what have you, you can't put a new well. That is an ex post facto law. Bills of attainder. Bills of attainder are just basically blanketed laws to go after people for a specific paradigm, a specific thing, or what have you. And bills of attainder are kind of like hate crimes. When you start actually regulating something like speech and thought and conscience and say, if you think this way, then you are a criminal, that's a bill of attainder. And we're close to creating bills of attainder today. Habeas corpus, you know, these types of protections, ex post facto law, attainders, and habeas corpus, as well as common law, these things were protected within the Constitution to make sure these fundamental rights were never taken from you. And as a matter of fact, the 14th Amendment applied it applied the protection from state and local government. That's the best way to put this. The 14th Amendment, Section 1, applied the protection of the Bill of Rights upon the states and federal government. So your governor, even with emergency powers, cannot suspend your constitutional rights. The only way to do that now, technically, would be for the federal government by deploying the militia and declaring martial law where the militia is deployed, because that's the terms that was established in the Constitution of the Ratification Debates. And we'll get into that when we cover the Ratification Debates. And I tell you, when we go through the Ratification Debates, that's going to take weeks, because there's that, we're talking about voluminous data and information. And every single bit of this is all gold. If you've never listened to the ratification debates because you're new to this show, you look forward to those days, because as you're commuting to work and you're listening to these podcasts, you're listening to these shows that we're giving you this, you're going to realize, oh my gosh, I thought the Federalist Papers were good, but this stuff is gold. It is. And it's legal gold, where the Federalist Papers are insightful. They're, you know, they help open your eyes, they give you insight, but they're not legal like the ratification debates. And that's the huge difference. We will be right back after these two promos. God bless. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 2115-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so as we were kind of covering that these things that are protected within the Constitution, and technically common law was not protected within the Constitution. It was basically left to states. And as a matter of fact, it was clarified because it was identified in the Virginia ratification debate. Said, hey, this is a repugnant deal here. Common law should be declared as the law of the land. And it wasn't declared as the law of the land, and because they wanted to make sure that states had the liberty to be able to choose what they were going to do. But it became obvious to Madison in the Bill of Rights that he had to allow and actually galvanize common law, because fundamental rights of a right by trial by jury and those types of things are the basis of common law. So common law is the constitutional basis. Now, you got to understand, the common law was still left to the states to choose until the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment that guaranteed these individual protections and immunities that actually galvanized common law to be applied to every state. And in so doing, actually, Louisiana has been errant in violating the Constitution by maintaining its civil law system. Because I don't know if you don't know this, I think it's only in capital cases. It may have changed it a little bit, but for the most part, you don't have a right to trial by jury in Louisiana. How repugnant is that? But anyway, these whole concepts of common law and grand juries were baked in protections because the framers understood how ex post facto, bills of attainder, writ of habeas corpus, common law and common law grand juries, as well as the right of trial by jury. In other words, a jury of your peers, those types of things. They understood the importance of those things to protect justice and to keep the people from being oppressed by a tyrannical government. This is why, you know, we're still in this position where, you know, they're convincing us that they can do things to us that are actually abject violations of the Constitution. So, one of the things that also was baked, because you hear about the separations of powers and these, you know, layers of protection that were placed into the Constitution. One of those things, and we go through this in the ratification debates, but one of these things is the standing army principle. Now, so what is a standing army? Most people think, well, that's a military force we call an army. It's a bunch of professional fighters. No. That is not the definition of an army to the framers. The definition of the army to the framers was the militia. The militia was synonymous with army. However, there was never to be a federal army. What the federal government was to do was to call forth the militia as necessary and federalize them when they needed to be deployed. Well, that became a huge, cumbersome problem, and the Civil War even proved that, because Lincoln could not use the militia in calling people forward to getting them to do his oppression against the South. Now, you got to understand that these protections were put in place, and Lincoln actually violated those. Now, not that I'm advocating that the South was wrong in its slavery, but they were right in being able to secede. Over the case of slavery, they had they were on the moral low ground, but on the constitutional high ground, they had the right to secede. And this is why I go through this so many times, that at that point in time, when the South seceded, what Lincoln needed to do was he needed to do the Emancipation Proclamation and actually use the Monroe Doctrine. And we're at that point of getting into this anyway, so I'm going to start blending some of this information, because the Monroe Doctrine basically stated and recognized that the United States was the big player in the Western Hemisphere. And we asserted our position as that big player, not as a tyrannical force, but a force of liberty, to say we're going to preserve the liberty for all of the states in the Western Hemisphere, that if you start going after the states to the south or north of us, then we will stand up and protect their liberty. Well, in this particular case, when the South seceded, Lincoln should have applied the Monroe Doctrine and should have said, we are emancipating slaves in America. We are no longer recognizing that people could ever be considered property. And we're going to eradicate slavery in the Western Hemisphere. And we're starting with these former states of the Union here. And there he would have been right. And at that point in time, he would have been able to actually federalize, because the militia, these people would have gotten on board with this. The only reason and the justification that Lincoln had going after the South was this unfounded claim that they couldn't be independent, that they couldn't secede, that they were obligated to death to be a part of the Union, where there is no such term, there's no such definition, there's no way you can get to that point from here, not in any logical sense. You have to separate logic to be able to make that assertion. That's how crazy Lincoln was. However, the reason why Lincoln, I truly believe, Lincoln, his position of becoming president, the divine hand of providence knew what he was doing, because the divine hand of providence knew that we needed to eradicate slavery, that slavery was a repugnant practice. And bottom line, Lincoln, as I tell people this, because he was such a failure, that when he became the president of the United States and supposedly the most powerful man in the world, this man that had become notorious in all of his failings throughout his life as president, that, you know, when you failed that many times, after a while, you just will do anything to not fail again. And so he basically asserted all sorts of tyrannical and unconstitutional powers so that he wouldn't be known as the president that failed the Union. He did not want that to happen on his watch. Therefore, when Lincoln actually, you know, started asserting his tyranny, he didn't get it until Franklin Douglas, or I think that's his name, Mr. Douglas, the black, I believe, is a journalist in the White House. They became acquaintances, and eventually, I don't know if they became friends, but he actually started listening to him and saying, "You've got to emancipate the slaves." And it was finally when Lincoln saw that there was just no way of winning this war. You know, he prostrated himself, and then he finally did the Emancipation Proclamation. And in so doing, he actually turned the course of the war around. They couldn't even win a battle until that. And so when you see the divine hand of providence and how things played out, you know, he was president for a reason, and it wasn't because he was insightful of doing the right thing. It was because here was a man that was so consumed in his failings that he refused to fail again. And so the Lord knew that he would finally, as he was coming to the brink of failing with getting the South to keep this, you know, to keep the Union together, he realized that in prostrating himself and in humbling himself and making it about slavery, he actually was lifted to the higher ground. And so, anyway, hopefully all this makes sense. But the standing army concept was very clear, that the framers knew that if the federal government had the ability to have a standing army and to enforce their own laws, then they would be able to wage any type of oppression that's the most mischief that any government could have. So this is why they limited the ability to enforce any federal law, that it could only be done by the militia. This is why in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, and it states this, that Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. In other words, to enforce the laws of the Union. This is even proven that after they had created this nation and created the first tax on liquor, distilled liquors, known as the whiskey tax, that there was a protest against this. And anybody that's listened to this show, we go through these things all the time. But they even lived by the letter of the Constitution, because they didn't create an army. They didn't create an IRS. They didn't create the ATF to go enforce these laws. They had the militia, and they used the militia and enforced the laws, and it worked. The reason why they stopped using the militia was because the federal government felt that they were too good to have to ask the states. But the framers knew that the stopgap, the actual gut check on am I being oppressive, is the militia, because the militia would then have to enforce upon their own family, their neighbors, their associates, and people that they know and love in their community these laws. It's a lot different when you get somebody from 3,000 miles away and import them into a state to say, you've got to do this. The only people that have any, you know, any, you know, reservations, say, I don't know whether we should do this or not. The only people that have that are those people that actually know these people and know that what they're possibly doing is morally wrong. This was so brilliant, putting the militia as the only execution force, or the only entity that could enforce federal law. And there's never been an amendment to change this. There's not one amendment within the Constitution that takes this power away from the federal government to force them to use the militia and give them their own power to do this. My friends, that's why we're going through all of this, and we're setting you up for even better information and empirical data. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.